Hi, folks. Sam Cedar here. This is usually where you hear that computerized voice that says you are listening to a free version of the Majority Report podcast daily, broadcasting daily, 11:30 a.m. Eastern. Today, it's an extended podcast again because some guy called, I accidentally called Mark Maron on my speed dial, and we ended up talking, so it goes a little longer. But in the better half of the program, we took a phone call from a very nice woman who was telling us about the 50-plussers support Occupy Wall Street group. People who are over 50 years old who are going down to support Occupy Wall Street to show that it's not just the young people who are tired of this BS that's happening with the 1%. 50-plussers support Occupy Wall Street. They will be going down to Zuccotti Park, formerly known as Zuccotti Park, I should say, in New York City, Saturday at 2 p.m., meeting around the big red statue. If you head down to what was formerly known as Zuccotti Park, now Liberty Plaza, you see the big red statue. You want to join them there. They don't have a website yet, and we're going to hopefully work on helping them, but I wanted to just pass that along. And now, enjoy the show, and then become a member.
You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, October 28th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dahl Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Cliff Schechter. Someone, a mystery someone, to give us movie reviews today. Songs from the Screaming Majority and maybe Jimmy Reefer Cake, who apparently feels that the best time to send the song is 30 seconds before the show launches. We'll also be talking about the boom. The boom in this case. Bo Biden suing Mayors, Delamere's, the system that the banks cooked up to transfer mortgages so that they could continue to sell their derivatives, except for there's no chain of title. We will talk about that. Rich get richer. Romney in Ohio for the SB5 battle, but didn't know that's why he was there. All that and more. A recap on the hour-long Twitter fight I got in with Andrew Breitbart again last night. You know, folks, sometimes it's just you get into a mood, and I don't know what to tell you. But first, before we bring on Cliff Schechter, of course, we need to first bring on the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
There you go. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, the musical stylings of Jimmy Reefer Cake introducing the one, the only Cliff Schechter. Welcome, Cliff.
Welcome, Samuel, or welcome you for welcoming me. I'm very happy to be here. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. Are you okay? Did you have a late night last night? You're sounding a little bit,
I get that raspy voice sometimes when I'd rather be drinking or sleeping.
When you'd rather be drinking or sleeping? No, I understand.
If you could pass like a big bottle of Old English through the phone, that would be cool.
I'll do my best.
Nah, I'm doing cool. It's cool. I've got a little bit of a cold. So what are you going to do, right?
Yeah, I know. It's a tough week. It's, you know, the weather is changing. It's casual Friday here. I am wearing my cardigan, my zip-up cardigan for the first time since last winter. And it's gotten cold, and it's going to make it a lot tougher for a lot of those people who are camping out all across the country as part of the Occupy Wall Street protests.
I want to point out quickly that my cold didn't happen because of the weather changed. What happened was my family was trying to escape Cuba, and I'm just not going to go any further.
No, well, I understand. No, of course. Your family was trying to escape Cuba, and that's why you got the cold. You know, we were talking about Marco, if that's his name, Rubio, last week. And it's gotten much worse for him. The stories keep coming, as predicted. You know, people don't appreciate. Apparently, there's now a record of him like on 20 different occasions, very specifically saying that his parents were fleeing Fidel Castro, and that he referred to himself as an exile, not an immigrant, which is what we were talking about. Early in the week, and which I think is going to be met with real offense in the immigrant community.
I think it would be, yeah. I mean, you know, come on. I mean, lying about that kind of a thing, that's amazing. Again, I know these guys routinely lie about everything, and I know families have kind of legends that are built up where, you know, stories are retold and told generation to generation that really aren't true. I think, honestly, when you start running for political office and doing that kind of thing, you have to kind of sift through what's true and what's not true before you just repeat stuff. But when you go a step further and you're repeating it literally to help your political career, then it damn well better be true. You know, in this case, again, it's not. I had a whole elaborate story. I was going to go through how I got my cold, you know, swimming through the shark-infested waters when my family was pushed out of Cuba because of the pogroms there. But we'll let it go because you all know where I was going with that.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, we know that when you were swimming with Elian Gonzalez on your back, trying to get all of you to safety. Yeah, of course, you pick up a virus here or there.
And it's important to know that on the way across, swimming across the Gulf there, I freed Willie. Reason Willie was free was because of me. I just want to make sure to point that out.
Wasn't he shackled to the USS Maine or something like that? Or have I got my stories mixed up?
Shackled to the USS Maine. Yeah, exactly. I think he was tied to the Lusitania.
Let's move on from these flights of fancy about Marco Rubio, the guy who we very well may not hear again for another couple of years. But be that as it may, let's talk about how the Democrats just seem completely incapable. You know, and again, this is the age-old question. Are they just stupid, or are they just really actually just not what we keep hoping them to be? It's probably a little bit of both. But the Democrats on the super committee this week, and we should start with the full knowledge, you and I both know, that the super committee, that this proposal as is will go nowhere. But even still, there's no value in putting on the table. They came out led by Baucus, right? What's his name?
Baucus.
How do you pronounce his name?
Baucus?
Baucus, is it? It's. I know he's a senator, a Democratic.
Baucus.
Baucus. Oh, Baucus. Okay. Different people put the emphasis on.
Oh, I think I know what it's called. It's called Bankus.
Yes, the Maximum Baucus.
Maximum Bankus.
Exactly. So he comes out with a proposal. It's a proposal. It's not really. Or what did they say? They didn't know. They said it was a presentation. Because they're trying to sort of have this both ways, a presentation that calls for more cuts than was actually called for in the original plan for this super committee, which includes $400 billion in Medicare and Medicaid savings, half of which would come from benefit cuts for seniors, disabled or low-income people. The other half would come from providers. They also presented the idea of a chain CPI, which we all know is just another way of saying cutting Social Security. It is a $4 trillion deal. It also calls for $300 billion in stimulus spending. We like that, I guess. And it calls for a raising of taxes. Now, the Republicans have already rejected this presentation, haven't they?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like, of course, I mean, as long as there's any taxes and they're not going to do anything, but I really go through this frustration constantly, and I always want to believe we've turned a corner, you know. I'm sure a lot of people go through this, so we're not alone. And I did with Obama, you know, I mean, even though I knew it was an act, because I don't really trust anything anymore. We're going to tax the top 1%, and, you know, corporations are bad, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But then, you know, it's like this happens with the damn super committee, and he's going to support the part of his jobs bill. He said initially, you can't break it up, but then they're allowed to break it up. And, of course, the parts that were in there to get the Republicans to join on, which they were never going to do and have never been willing to do 500 times in a row. So, literally, you have to be so effing stupid to think at this point they will. So I don't know if you should be running a laundromat, much less the country, but sorry, I digress. And, of course, so those are the parts that they want to keep in.
Yeah, let's touch on that, because this is a story that I had pulled, but I hadn't spoke about this week. What Cliff is referring to is, of course, the Republicans. President Obama initially said, "We're not gonna. It's you got to have the whole package or nothing." And then the strategy was to go and have a series of embarrassing votes for the Republicans, which this part of it, you know, worked. They wouldn't raise taxes on people making over $1 million by 0.5% to pay for new teachers or cops. But then the Republicans said, "Oh, well, we're going to pass a couple of parts of your jobs bill, but the parts that we like, which is essentially like scaling back Medicaid, and some tax cuts." And now it's going to be very difficult for the president to veto something like this. I don't know what's going to happen with it in the Senate. But nevertheless, this was, again, just sort of – this is – I mean, we should make this clear. This is all political theater. The Democrats know that the Republicans won't pass anything, like Cliff said, that involves any tax raising. But in terms of political theater, this is bad theater, isn't it?
It's terrible theater, and it's terrible. I mean, the whole thing is just like watching this over and over again. I mean, I want to strangle somebody, Sam. You know, I mean, I honestly, it's like I feel like I'm stuck in this position where, you know, of course, because the Republicans are a bunch of cranks, and even ones with moderate inclinations, you know, which would be the two Mormon guys, and Huntsman doesn't seem to have a shot anyhow, but if it were either of those guys, we know what would happen. They got in office, they would have to kowtow to the Tea Party and the far right, and they'd have to put in, you know, terrible judges and do stupid shit, like probably start a war with Brazil because somebody sneezed on an American on an airplane or something. And, you know, and so it's like, we're stuck with this guy, but I honestly cannot sit here and defend him. So if people want to be pissed at me, you go right ahead, because I can't do it. I've tried, man. I've tried to defend Obama. I've tried, and I watched the stupidest shit. I'm sorry. I don't know how else to put it. A little passionate this morning. It happened again and again, and him get played again and again and get made to be look weak and stupid again and again. He and his whole team of imbeciles. And I just, you know, I don't really know how else to react, man, because I can only spend so much time sitting there watching my side, you know, be like the Buffalo Bills in the Super Bowl in the 90s, you know, and continually get our asses handed to us because our people are too dumb and don't have the fucking cojones to do what needs to be done. And I mean, I'm sorry, I'm exploding, I know, but I don't know how else to react at this point. It's like, really, was that not predictable? Didn't you go to Harvard Law? You didn't know that by now? I mean, you knew who these people were. It took you what? The stimulus, the health care bill, the Dodd-Frank, you know, and the whole rest of the stuff. And somehow at this point, after, you know, every other piece of evidence there, oh, they're not going to act crazy. They're going to be reasonable. Of course they'll be reasonable, and they won't threaten the full faith and credit of the United States with the debt ceiling. Oh, look, there they are doing that. I mean, I don't understand how many goddamn examples of this do you need? So at what point do I just believe that you're corrupt?
I mean,
this is what you want.
That's what I mean, you know, RJ Eskow has really unloads today in Huffington Post on the super committee. And, you know, we all know that the super committee, we all know that the Democrats at least are carrying water for the Obama administration. And you have a situation where, you know, he basically lays it out. He basically says, who is this proposal for? You know the Republicans are going to reject it. So it's political theater. Who is the theater for? There is a preponderance of Americans who are against the idea of cuts to Social Security and Medicare. And we're talking like poll numbers in the 60s, 70s. Maybe in the way you phrase the question, you can get up into the 80s even. And so you see a vast majority of Americans who are against this stuff, yet they propose it as if there is some third party out there. And by third party, I don't mean literally a political party, but there is someone up there. Maybe David Broder is sitting on the right-hand side of God, looking down, and they're waiting for Broder to say, gosh, these Democrats seem very reasonable. I will take the 75 electoral votes that are awarded you once you walk through the gates of St. Peter, if you've been a centrist, right-leaning guy, and I will give them to the Democrats during the election. I mean, what is the calculation here?
I mean, I have no idea. I can't come up with one. So that's kind of my whole point. There can't be one. I mean, again, is it that these guys still are convinced that, oh, the independents will like us if we look like we're trying to do the reasonable thing and the Republicans reject it? Hint, okay, guys, look at the polls. Independents fucking hate you. You know why? Because you haven't carried through on most of the things you promised, and they see you as weak, and they want a strong leader, and they see you as principleless, if that's a word, and so they don't like you, because that's what most people tend to actually look for, principled leaders that stand up for things. And when you sit there and you continually have this wimpy persona where you offer up half-assed bills that still get thrown back in your face because you're so busy kissing the other side's ass, and then you go, oh, well, I guess we can't get it done. And the economy continues to get worse, so some of those independents you love so much are losing their jobs because you're playing games that are blowing up in your face. Well, geez, what do you think is going to happen then? You think it would have been better to fight and be, oh my God, not look bipartisan, but get good bills passed that do things like bail people out who are being thrown out of their houses and actually create jobs? I mean, I don't understand these people, and they so anger me because they're so stupid over and over again. You know what I mean? And it's like, I mean.
And look, you know, they're real. You know, we should not forget that there are real implications to all of this. David Dayan points today to a report by the Center for American Progress, which was trying to make a different point other than the one that they ended up making, and trying to pin the bad economy on House Republicans. Ran the numbers on the 2011 budget cuts. And, you know, we were told in this budget deal, like, oh, the cuts are really sort of pushed down the road. They're not really real cuts. They're cutting things that are sort of, you know, projected expenses that weren't going to really happen. But there were 250 program reductions in the fiscal year 2011 continuing resolution. That's the budget. And remember, Democrats didn't pass this budget in 2010 because Blue Dogs were afraid of passing the budget that it would hurt their electoral chances, which didn't work out so well. And these resolution, it is estimated, cut 370,000 jobs. Now, we know that the government has lost now close to 600,000, 700,000, 800,000 jobs in the past couple of years because of cuts on either a state, local, county, federal level. And they show that, like, you know, $2.5 billion in local law enforcement cuts and first responder cuts cost 36,000 jobs nationwide. Postponing environmental cleanup of nuclear weapon sites cost over 6,800 direct and indirect jobs. Cutting back on the real estate portfolio of the General Service Administration costs tens of thousands more jobs. On and on and on. I mean, it's fairly obvious. Government spending, when it pays for people to do things, when you cut it, will cut jobs.
Absolutely. I honestly feel like these are guys that are sitting in front of like a TV set, and they basically, they've got a remote control, and they keep pushing the on button and the off button, the on button, the off button, and thinking that somehow the TV will stay on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to create, we're going to put out programs, infrastructure to create private sector jobs, but then we're going to cut spending for government so that the government keeps cutting enough jobs to, so that we can get rid of enough jobs to make up for the, all the jobs we create. We're going to turn the deficit into something that never was spoken about under Bush while he was blowing it up. We're going to turn that into this hysteria, this fetish, and we're going to be as guilty as the Republicans of it, because the Obama people are as guilty on that one as the Republicans are. And so we're going to make it so that anytime we make a proposal, we also have, you know, to create jobs, we also have to propose to cut a huge amount of spending. Well, do they not get that they are offsetting every freaking thing they do?
Right.
I just don't get this.
To extend your metaphor.
So that spending is what, that spending, whether it's on unemployment, whether it's on certain government programs that allow people to keep more money in their pockets that they'll spend, you know, whether it's on actually keeping people employed by government. I mean, I know we all know the government doesn't create jobs, which is why Secret Service people don't really work, and firemen don't really work, and policemen don't work. All veterans, everybody in the military, they're a bunch of lazy assholes who don't do anything, because, you know, the government doesn't create jobs.
There's no jobs. They're not doing anything.
No, of course not. I mean, none of those people actually do anything. That's what the shame is. In any case, I mean, so it's like, you know, all you're doing is undercutting. It's kind of like, hey, we're passing this stimulus bill for $700 billion, but we're cutting out all the state aid. So all the money we put out there is all going to be counteracted by the fact that all the states are going to have to balance their budgets by cutting spending and firing people. I mean, this is just not rocket science.
It's the functional equivalent, to extend your metaphor of using the remote control to turn on the TV and then going like, and to balance this out, let's go unplug it.
Exactly.
Right. We keep hitting the on button on the TV. It's just not working because, of course, we've unplugged the TV. All right. Well, let's turn for a moment to an arena that's a little bit less frustrating. There's a lot more promise in the states and, of course, what's happening with Occupy Wall Street. But one of those areas of promise is, of course, the ballot initiative to overturn SB5 in your home state of Ohio, your adopted home state of Ohio. There's been two things that have happened in the past week in those regard. And the election's coming up, correct? It's the referendum's coming up.
November 8th.
So yes. We're about a week and a half away, I guess, from it.
Yes, we are. That's about right.
And two things happened this week. One is that Mitt Romney got sort of played as a pawn, which is a fairly easy thing to do when you have absolutely no rudder yourself. You can get pushed around.
You literally are soulless. You're a soulless zombie who I'm not even sure is actually technically. I mean, he's sort of a cyborg.
It's possible. You know? The jury's still out. I'm sure that if he thought that he could get him some votes, he'd come out and claim he was. And then 36 hours later, like when I said I was a cyborg, what I meant to say was that it wouldn't be bad to be one. Unless
right.
You think
I,
it's
I have
bad
plenty
for
of
you.
Friends that are in fact cybernetic organisms, but I didn't mean to claim I am one.
Well, one of my sons is a Cylon. Let me put it that way. Simultaneously, the unions came out with a memo that supposedly was for insiders' eyes only, but I think it was a way to sort of make sure that people are still going to show up for this. So, tell me both those stories.
Well, the Romney story is fun because he came here earlier in the year. He tweeted out that he supported keeping SB5, and that is the union-busting anti-collective bargaining bill that John Kasich passed, which made him one of the most unpopular governors in the country, supported by Alec, which you and I have discussed before, who pushed these bills around the country, like the one in Wisconsin.
This is the American Legislative Exchange Council.
Yes. And we're a bunch of right-wing corporate front group that creates legislation that's pro-corporate, and you know, very socially regressive, and their friends in groups that have words like family in them, and corporations give them money for it. And a guy they'd given an award to a couple years ago for being this great guy that Alec loved, whose name is, I think it's Bill, the first name, Bill or Bob Seitz, who's an estate rep senator from the Cincinnati area, actually voted against this thing because he said it was too extreme. Bill Cunningham, the local Rush Limbaugh in Cincinnati, came out against it because he said it was too extreme. So for people to get an idea how absolutely crazy this thing is. And again, it includes firefighters and police, which the Wisconsin bill did not. Very smart of these guys, because firefighters and police have come out and started kicking their butts. So, oops. So first Kasich wanted to sit down and negotiate after refusing to negotiate when he started seeing the polling numbers look like. And then, of course, realized that the unions told him to stuff it smartly. So in any case, that's some background. Romney tweeted out he supported this thing. And he came to town here, met, you know, and he was asked. He said, well, I don't want to dip my toes in the water there, or whatever stupid thing he said. So he refused to take a position, and then, of course, he was attacked for it because it's the usual multiple-choice mitt, and he decided he was in Florida again. The thing is hugely unpopular here. The last PPP poll taken here, well, I think it was 56% want this repealed, will vote no on issue two, if that's the issue, the ballot issue that it is. And 36%, I believe, were for it. Important note that they only needed a little less than 100,000 signatures to get this thing on the ballot, and they got 1.3 million. So you're seeing the flip side of the Occupy Wall Street coin here. I feel like the Occupy movement, and I could be wrong, Sam, you've been down there, so please criticize and point out where I'm wrong. I feel like that's a lot of the communities that have felt after 2008 thought they were getting something and have felt like they've been ignored, and the Wall Street system is taking advantage of them. It feels like it's very young. It's a lot of the young people. There's a lot of minority groups involved. There may be some unions, but I haven't felt like, and I could be wrong, that it's primarily union. I felt it's more that sort of a young part of the coalition, whereas the union part of the coalition is the one that is really standing up. And they did in Wisconsin when they recalled the two state senators, and that's what they're doing here. And saying enough is enough, and you're not going to do this. And it's hugely unpopular because, for some weird reason, people think that there should be enough firefighters to actually put their house out when it's on fire, and weird. Police to stop people from robbing their families. And so that's the Romney angle of it. The angle overall is that, you know, I've been careful. I talked about this on our mutual friend Tom Hartman's show the other day. And I'm very careful to say that for anybody listening here who's in Ohio, and do not get to the point where you get complacent. Knock on doors, go out, you know, obviously vote, but don't get complacent, because, you know, the right will do everything they can to try and trick people in the end, tell people the wrong ballot, you know, the wrong place to go vote, and, you know, they'll suppress as many votes as they can. That's what they do. We all know that. So don't get complacent. But as of right now, it looks like this thing's going down, not even really in a blaze of glory so much as a blaze of pathetic
And my understanding is that ballot initiatives, though, in Ohio, the polling is sort of like has always been in the, historically has been sort of off the mark a lot of times. So that is
true. Often, I mean, it's definitely worse. I believe it just because I can tell you that driving around and, you know, even some of the wealthier suburbs here, I don't really see any yes on issue two signs. There's so many no on issue two signs. All the people I've talked to, again, including Republicans I know, who think this thing is crazy. So my sense is, and that's only anecdotal, that the polling is not far off. But again, people should know that, yes, the polling can be wrong on these things. It's tougher in off-year elections to get an accurate sample of who's going to turn out. And you know, they'll spend every last dollar in their corporate coffers to turn people out. So everybody needs to get out there and make sure to, you know. But I guess, you know, it was tough to poll the Wisconsin race, too, and we did recall two guys in blood-red Republican districts. So it makes me – and 1.3 million people did sign a petition that only needed like 175 or something thousand signatures. You combine that makes me feel like we're in a good place. But again, no complacency. People need to be out there.
Cliff, we just have a minute or two. Let me ask you one or two more questions here. One is, if I was to go on Trade Sports and bet as to whether or not Kasich, if he loses this, ends up quitting his job halfway through and going back over to Fox to raise some personal funds, What do you think the odds are of that? Or is he just going to hang out and wait until because he can't be recalled, right? In Ohio, they don't have a recall.
Yeah, no, we don't have that here, sadly. Are you looking for me to make a joke or you want a serious analysis?
Well, I mean, if you think there's a chance for me to make some money on trade sports, I want to hear about it. No, it's joking around.
He's a stubborn ass. That's how he got himself into this mess. He made a lot of money through Lehman Brothers, the infamous Lehman Brothers, Fox, and a variety of other means during his 8 or 10 years out of office. And you may remember in 2000, even in his early 40s, having been a congressman, he ran for president. So he thinks a lot of himself, and I think he intends to run for president someday. So my guess is he thinks he'll weather this, get reelected, you know, to a second term in 2014 and in 2016 be in a position to run for president.
So no reality show in his future.
As much as I'd like it, enjoy it, I don't think so.
And we were talking about polls, and you had mentioned to me over the course of the week, there was a poll. What was this? It was a Gallup poll about gun ownership that you wanted to talk about. It was because it was so crazy.
Well, because, yeah, I mean, Gallup, they may just be one of the dumber polling agencies out there. And again, they ask a question, and what pisses me off is how then CBS and other stations have on liars from the NRA, you know, who only is a representative of the arms dealers at this point, sell more guns to you, me, or Al Zawahiri, and it makes them happy because they make more money. And they present about the Second Amendment. So they ask this question of, you know, do you believe in completely restricting personal gun ownership? Which is the stupidest question in the world, because that's not even what I believe in. And nobody who's pushing for greater gun control laws is pushing for that. So when the vast majority of people say no, then they kind of claim that, oh my God, everybody's against gun control, right? To ask a question like that is so utterly stupid, when in the end, I've been doing this stuff, I work on this issue, you know, for a while, you know, according to all sorts of different polls that I've been a part of conducting, it's just, and one was conducted by Frank Luntz, by the way, very liberal guy, 89% support, you know, having background checks at gun shows for everybody. Yeah. 94% want owners to have to alert police if their guns are stolen. You know, 87% want to close the terror gap where people who can get on an airplane, can't get on an airplane, can still buy guns. Those are all gun control measures. 70-something% support the assault weapons ban. Again, hell, over 50% support gun registration. So for them to do this stupid poll where they ask one question and say, do you support a ban on civilian possession of handguns, something, again, that I don't even support, and claim that that is indicative of that most people said no, that people aren't for any gun control, again, you know what I mean? That's utterly stupid.
Why don't you guys why doesn't somebody change the name of those proposals from gun control to simply gun sanity?
That's actually a great idea. I may propose that in our next secret meeting of the cabal of me and the Rothschilds and the Bilderbergers.
Of course, yes. When you and the guys who are pulling the strings on Occupy Wall Street meet, you should bring that up. But Cliff, we got to jump.
I mean, seriously, that's actually a good idea.
It is a good idea. Take it. That's what I'm here for. Are you kidding? You come on the
show.
Well,
you're also there
for
one other thing.
The least I can do.
Oh, well, you're there for one other thing. Don't kick me off yet, because there is one thing that I need to point out.
What is it?
Okay?
Yeah.
You're also there to teach my son bad words.
I am?
I want you to know that. Yes, you are. I hold you personally responsible. So, you know, we're watching this Star Wars thing, because I've gotten my son into Star Wars. Very tricky of me to get him away from Thomas the Train and into Star Wars, which is awesome, by the way. Except for he hits me with these lightsabers really hard and my hands hurt. But that's another story. He's watching, and at one point he comes over to me and he says, Dad, what's a molester? This is my five-year-old. And I'm like, I don't know what to say to him. I'm like, where are you getting that from? And it turns out there's this nice little ad at the beginning of Star Wars before it goes on for this show called Bob's Burgers.
Oh.
And this young lady, you know, when these two health inspectors, one of whom's voice sounded a hell of a lot like some guy I know named Sam Cedar, come in and start asking questions, she tells them the burger of the day is the molester. And so, you know, what's going on with that, Sam?
That's a good question, because your son saw a repeat, and I did not get any residual checks.
Well, if you're going to teach my son to ask intelligent questions about molestation, you should at least get paid well for it.
Hey, so no kidding.
Make sure they get you a check for that.
Have them call me.
You were one of the health inspectors, right?
I was.
That
indeed.
Was your voice, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, I am Hugo, the health inspector on Bob's Burgers. That is right.
Yeah, I could tell the. I mean,
the whiny, high pitched, complainy voice. Yes, I've heard it before. Believe me, that is. I put that on. That's just that's a complete put on my part.
Well, I enjoy it. I think it's good stuff. Is the show? What's going on with that show?
I'm in like one or two episodes this season. I don't know what they made a huge mistake last season. I did it. Then the show's coming back soon. So I'm not going to talk about it that much because I don't know what happened. Hugo was a much beloved character, and then they bring me back for one episode.
Hugo should be back the whole entire time.
Well,
that's
maybe
why I just thought I'd bring it up.
We're going to start a campaign on this.
Yeah, I will. I'm going to push it online because when my son asked me that and I saw what he was talking about, I'm like, that's not just any show. That's Sam's show. I was pretty excited that, you know, if somebody's going to teach my kid the word molester, it might as well be Sam Cedar, quite frankly.
All right. Well, Cliff, I appreciate that. I'm available to do this at bar mitzvahs, too, for kids. Cliff, we'll talk to you next week. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thanks a lot, Sam. Take care, buddy.
Let's drill, baby, drill, not stall, baby, stall.
That woman is an idiot.
Here it is, the Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that party. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Analysts, taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him,
we didn't want a garden variety politician. Taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
All right. Now, folks, we're going to jump. I got a call. Let's see. Let's call this guy and get we're going to call to get our movie review guy. Hopefully he'll answer. Let's see.
Hello.
Hello. Is this Chris Rosen with our movie reviews?
Who's this? Sam?
Yeah.
Hey, it's Mark Maron.
Oh, geez, Mark.
Yeah, you must have dialed the wrong number. Did you dial the wrong number?
I guess I did. M is right next to R in my my address book because I only know three people. And so... M and R are actually right next to each other. Gosh, God darn it. I got to come up with
that. It's sort of an interesting mistake because we haven't spoken in a while. It always has some effect on me when I hear your voice.
Now, I understand just coincidentally, completely coincidentally, you're in New York City now.
I am. I came in for a couple of days to do a thing. And,
what thing?
I'm doing the Radio Vision Festival. I'm doing a WFMU panel. It's me and Ira Glass and Tom Sharpling.
You're not on FMU.
No, but they're doing it's a festival, Sam. They think there's comic books involved and talks and discussions. And at 10 in the morning tomorrow, I'll be sitting there with Tom and Ira talking about something. It's unclear to me, but it should be fun.
Where is this taking place?
Oh, that's a good question. Hold on. It's taking place at the Metropolitan Pavilion, 123 West 18th Street.
Never even heard of that. I don't even know. I've never even heard of
You've heard of Tom Sharpling and Ira Glass, though, yes?
Yeah, I have. I mean, I don't know. It seems like a weird panel.
No, it's certainly weird, but it sounds fun, doesn't it?
Moderately. I mean, I'm busy, so I can't go.
Oh, I did you turn it down? Because I might have been their second choice.
Yeah, I'm sure. I don't reject all proposals by myself. I have a staff who do that for me.
I understand. Sure.
Yeah.
I mean,
I had other things
busy
to do.
Sure. Of course.
Not the
Where
least of
right
which
now?
Is the Harvest Fest happening at my daughter's school. So, I mean, granted.
Oh, that
that's
should be fun.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be great. It's actually happening later in the day, but I probably have some other thing. I don't know. I don't handle my schedule like you do.
No, I understand, Sam. You're very busy. I think we all appreciate that. I'm happy you made this weird mistake and called me because we don't talk to each other enough.
I know. Believe me. And I understand you're doing some comedy this weekend as well?
Yeah, I'm going to do some spots at the Comedy Cellar. I haven't been there in over a year, years it feels like. I'm sort of excited to go down there and hang out.
Well, and oh, I should also tell you this, that I went to like a parent dinner thing last night. And my daughter's teacher was there, and it turns out her husband, huge fan of Break Room Live.
Really? I've gotten some emails about Break Room Live too. I mean, I think the last time you and I talked, it made people nostalgic or for what they think is some sort of orchestrated tension. And
right.
And yeah, and it was very, you know, still some fans. I got an email the other day saying, you know, I've been with you since Break Room Live, and I've still stuck in there, even though there's no Sam.
Yeah, no, I think those eight people really enjoyed it. And my experience is that most people said I really love Break Room Live, and but it's hard to listen to Mark solo.
Yeah, it's weird because I get that exact same, but just put your name in that place. Mm. I, you know, what can you do? People like us both together. But we both know just because
it's funny when I get those emails, I say, do me a favor. Right, Mark, just pretend that you just put my name in there just to make him feel good, because I don't want to feel bad about this.
Well, that's so nice. I had no idea you had a heart.
Yeah, no, I do.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought that was just left. You just reserved that for your child and some political causes. Hey, is it true that you and Andrew Breitbart are doing a show together?
No, not that I'm aware of, but I've invited him onto the program. Last night I got into it again with him on Twitter, and you know, I said, how is it that you fund your websites? And he says, well, loans and ads. And so I went to his website. He's got two Google ads on his website.
Yeah.
Now, I know how much you get from Google AdSense. And there's no amount of traffic in the world that you can actually make a living, particularly having any type of staff, with two Google ads on your site. And
yeah.
It's in his book, apparently, that his father loaned him money at the first off. In the first 3 months, he paid it back, $25,000. And I said, how are you managing to do that? And he won't tell me. And he just got – this is what's sort of stunning. 3 months ago or 2 months ago, he got $10 million invested in his site. Now, let me ask you this. Here's a guy who is the defamation suit against him from Shirley Sherrod is moving through the courts. He's got a website that seems to be supported by two Google ads, yet somebody dumps $10 million into it. Does that seem weird to you?
Well, I don't know. Like, I just signed up for the $5 million Google ad. Did you not?
I didn't get that email.
Yeah, no, I'll forward it to you. It's a limited thing they're doing with some podcasters and sort of mid-range media personalities. They'll offer you $5 million if you just put a Google ad up. It's weird.
See, this is why. I'm such a bad businessman. And he was like, well, will you disclose where your funds come from? And I'm like, sure, because everyone who listens to this program knows that, A, they're limited. B, they 80% of my income basically comes from members, maybe a little bit less. I also get paid to do Ring of Fire Radio, huge money in weekend radio.
So the assumption is that he's being funded by a Republican think tank or organization that sees him as a good pawn.
I mean, look, either that or someone who is really loose with their money. I mean, he's been doing Breitbart.com for over 5 years, and if he's sporting on his front page two ads, and they are both Google ads, where do you get the sense that this is a good $10 million investment?
I think you should call his father and just make sure everything's okay.
That's what I want to know, is if his dad maybe is a VC guy and will give me that type of loan.
I think that, you know, considering the anger that his father must feel because his son has become such a disappointment and obviously a drain on his finances, maybe that's the guy you go to sort of facilitate a relationship between you and Andrew that can make you both a lot of money, which is just a show where you two fight.
Oh, that could be interesting. Maybe his dad would go for that. I mean, let me ask you this. And you, because you're out in Hollywood, well, you know, you don't live in Hollywood per se, but you're on the periphery and you talk to Hollywood people all the time.
Yeah.
And you certainly know something about, you know, back before you were wildly successful on my sort of like standing on my shoulders and keeping me down.
Thank you for that, by the way.
You're welcome. You know a little bit about bitterness. Here's a guy, Andrew Breitbart, who grows up in Brentwood, probably sort of exposed to everything that's going on in Hollywood. Do you think that, what do you think accounts for his obsession with Hollywood so much so that he would dedicate like a, one of his big platforms to sort of criticizing Hollywood liberals?
Well, I think that's where he made his first money. I believe that book, you know, which I actually, you know, enjoyed reading for some parts of it. He wrote a book with, what's that guy's name? You remember that book? It was about Hollywood, but it wasn't just about liberal Hollywood. He wrote it with another guy. It was sort of tabloidy. Obviously, he's you know, deeply resentful of the fact that he was never accepted by this crew of attractive, progressive people that he grew up with. And he's not talented or interesting enough to make a go at anything other than spiting them.
Right. That's exactly. It's like, you know, sometimes you see things that are so obvious. You just need someone to sort of give you like a double check on it. But it's so obvious. It's stunning. And I've actually seen footage of him speaking at like young Republicans on colleges, and the amount that he obsesses about celebrities and the secret knowledge that he possesses about them and slurs them, actually, you know, and people that I actually know and know that what he's talking about is complete bullshit. So it's weird to see somebody do that. He's sort of like a really untalented Kathy Griffin.
Right. And yeah, an untalented right wing, you know, bitter Kathy Griffin who has no sense of humor about anything. And I think that it's also telling that, you know, why doesn't he deal, like, if he's such a right wing operative, why doesn't he deal with something other than, you know, setting, you know, right wing figures up or being tabloid about it and educate himself and be a genuine right wing thinker as opposed to just this bottom feeding, you know, yellow journalism douchebag.
I don't know that there really is much difference, but that's, I think, a niche that he's found. And obviously somebody's come and given him $10 million to continue doing what he's doing.
Going through the dirty laundry.
Right. Either that or they think that, you know, hey, there's nothing, there's no sure sign of financial success than somebody who has a website with two Google ads on there.
And an entire page dedicated to Anthony Weiner's penis.
All right, so be that as it may, any chance that you can give me a couple of film recommendations since I mistakenly only have three names in my phone book? Like it's
honestly,
B, R, and M, I think are the...
I'm a little obsessed with the movie Drive, and, you know, like to the point where I need to see it again, and I'm actually hoping that, you know, I paid my union dues enough to get screeners in SAG or the Writers Guild, so I could get when the awards come along, so I can watch it again. I think Drive is a really smart, beautiful, you know, art, you know, slightly arty movie.
I've never even heard of it.
It's the one with Ryan Gosling and Albert Brooks. Albert Brooks plays the heavy, and Bryan Cranston is in it as well. It's a great movie. It's one of those movies where you watch it and you realize like, oh man, there's something different about this movie because it's really saturated in color. You don't really know what the era it's taking place in. It's really mysterious and, it doesn't have like a Hollywood ending. And it was made by, I believe, a Dutch filmmaker, but it's really a smart movie and it's a great movie. It's compelling. And Albert Brooks is insanely good as a heavy. And you would never think that in a million years that he would be menacing. And it's, if you're an Albert Brooks fan, you definitely have to check this out.
Well, I am. I will watch it. I'm going to have to go to like Pirate Bay or something like that to get a hold of that because I'm not allowed to go outside to see anything in the movies. So I'll either have to wait
really?
For that to stream on note. No, absolutely not.
Well, also I've been watching, you know, I've been getting these independent film documentaries or the independent television documentaries that, you know, I talk about on my show that were that have been pretty good.
Wait a second. Who's sending you these?
The company that makes them.
What the frick? Why can't I get on that list?
I don't know. I just, you know, I don't know. Sam.
How did you get on that list?
Look, I think that they enjoy the show.
Well, what's the film?
What's
you're
the matter?
About?
What do you want? What do you what?
It's just like I don't understand. Like you, I don't know.
Like you don't know.
You got all the lists. Somehow you got all the lists when we ended our show. You got all the lists.
I didn't get any lists. I had nothing. I now I feel bad. I don't have it right at the tip of my tongue.
What are you doing? Are you taking a bath?
No, I'm sitting here. I was looking for you know, the name of the movie. Like I saw one documentary about a guy who needed a kidney and was in a band in San Francisco. It was excellent. And I watched another documentary about some guys in Sweden who put together a synchronized swimming team. I know this sounds crazy, but they're really touching.
The synchronized swimming documentary is all right. Fair enough.
Yeah, but also I watched Raging Bull on the plane yesterday because I got upgraded and they gave me my own viewing thing.
Why did you get upgraded?
Because I fly a lot and I put in for an upgrade. They upgraded me because they were so excited at the possibility of me sitting next to another Republican personality that maybe I could undress in front of.
Yeah,
I don't
incidentally,
know why.
If people don't remember. I guess this was right around this time last year, right? Wasn't it? Because it was after some Jewish holiday, I think, or Thanksgiving, because I remember driving down the Merritt Parkway from Worcester and stopping at a gas station and getting a text. And it was, I'm on a plane. I'm sitting next to Ken. What was his name again?
Melman.
Ken Melman. What the fuck?
Well, you know, like, I really, like, am pretty, like, in retrospect, I wish that, hold on, I'm going to tell you the name of that. I wish that I had done more with that.
Well, for those who missed it, Mark was live tweeting his sitting next to Ken Melman and was showing his bare breast as Ken Melman
was. Well, the thing was, like, you had the right idea. Like, you know,
you're cupping it. You're cupping your phone. Okay,
look, here, I'm here. Yeah. Is that I think in that moment, the one question I could have asked that I didn't ask, and I kicked myself about it when I let myself think about it, is do you have any regrets about supporting an anti-gay agenda for as long as you did in a almost violent way, you know, as somebody who is now out as a gay person? And I could have asked him that, and I'm stupid. And instead, I chose to just show my boobs while he slept.
I think, you know, look, at the end of the day, I know what we all know what his answer would be. Well, you know, I was working from the inside, or we didn't really have that agenda. I mean, he was the chairman of the Republican Party when their electoral strategy was, at least in about 7 or 8 states in the country, let's get an anti-gay ballot measure on the ballot, and that will draw out our right-wing nutjob evangelical voters. But he would deny it. You know, of course he would. I mean, he's a professional denier and liar. And also, obviously, that was built into his DNA because that's what you need to do for that long.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
So I almost think the tit thing was even that much better because, you know what, F him. We're at a time, I think, like where there should be absolute scorn for members of the establishment. And that's a good way of doing it.
Well, good. Well, then I feel better. Thanks, man. I had no idea.
I went on. Did I tell you the story? I was on Radigan a couple of weeks ago, and Thomas Friedman was on. And do you remember that interview that he did with Charlie Rose where he said, suck on this was what we needed to show the Iraqi people? We needed our soldiers to say, suck on this. And I went on, and it was sort of anemic, but it was, you know, I just worked into my question the word suck on this. And just the idea that he was sort of staring at me, and he couldn't really quite figure out if I had meant those words in a particular way. I just think like it's good to sort of create this sense that they can't go into public spaces and not have some measure of accountability for what they've done. Whether it's I'm going to show up in a picture with someone's boob or someone's going to say the word suck on this to me and just sort of smile as he says it to me. I think it's important to put that out there. And so I applaud that.
Well, thank you, man. I don't know if I've ever felt that much support from you. I appreciate that.
Don't get carried away. I mean, because you know, I think there were probably better things you could have done. But I'm saying within the context of what you're capable of, I thought that was good.
So what have you been up to?
Nothing.
Really? Are you upstate? How come I hear somebody in the background? Do you have somebody there
now?
Yeah,
I have a whole producing crew here that apparently can't get me on any list to get any documentaries.
Well, maybe I don't know what to tell you.
All right. Well, I'm too busy to do the hour-long interview right now. So.
Here are the films. I'll tell you what they are. They're called Men Who Swim.
Men Who Swim.
That's one that you can get it on iTunes. And the other one was called D-Tour, as in D-Tour, which these are really, they're kind of interesting documentaries. And I don't watch a lot of documentaries, but the Men Who Swim thing was one of those documentaries where I was like, is this real? I mean, these are about a group of men our age who actually put together a synchronized swimming team, and it's pretty hilarious.
All right, I'll check it out. It sounds good.
But also, it's always good to watch Casino once a year if you can. It's good to run the first two Godfathers at least, you know.
When was the last time you've watched, what do you call it, 3 Days of the Condor?
The original one?
Yeah, was there a new one?
Yeah, I think they did a remake with Bruce Willis or something. I haven't watched that recently. Hannah and Her Sisters, always good to watch that occasionally. And for your audience, I don't think it's a bad idea to watch a Parallax View whenever you can.
Well, you know, Mark was in the what's available for Majority Report members is one of our swag opportunities is the Bad Situationist, where Mark actually shines in a scene that was based on an homage to the Parallax View.
Right. But there's also been a lot of a talk on the blogs about, you know, why such a short scene for Mark, you know, and because I really was, you know, just
because I'm quite good as a director, sort of measuring up capacity with performance.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess it was a different time for me. I mean, I'd imagine that if we were to make a movie now, you and I. Hey, let me ask you another question, because I was you directed all of the Gary Busey TV shows, right?
That's correct.
Right,
well, I think I did like 12 out of 13. I didn't do the pilot, but I did every one that aired. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that was good. Have you got anything like that coming up? Are you pitching anything, or what's going on?
What? What you no, just I mean, like, what?
Wait, you got any funny things?
You why are you looking for a director?
No, Sam, how would that work? I mean, let's say you said I had a project, and I said, you know, I out of everybody, I want Sam Cedar to direct this.
Right.
Someone would have to shoot that.
What, you don't think that there's value in getting a behind-the-scenes DVD or extra footage? Are you aware of anything in terms of ancillary properties when it comes to these shows?
I'm pitching this to you. You come up with an idea for me that you're going to direct, and then I hire a crew, a documentary crew, to shoot that process, and we see if it ever gets made.
What's happening with your podcast show, the show based on your podcast?
I don't know. A few people didn't want it, and now you know there's someone. You know there is there's some people that are interested, but it's gotten a little complicated. We'll see.
Interested. What does that mean? Like it's TV business. Are you talking about like European television or what?
Well, yeah, we're at European television now, but it's really a subtitle issue, and we're not sure we can negotiate that. You know, certain things will be understood. It's still alive. That's all I'm going to say to you. I don't want to be cagey, but I don't want to jinx anything either. And you know, if you give me 2 seconds, you know, something bitter will come out of my mouth, and then I'll fuck it up for me, and then I'll be back.
And what else
you
have going? Now you're on like what, 12 public radio stations?
No, I don't know. We were on a lot of public radio stations.
More?
We did 10 more. Yeah, we did 10 episodes that were cut for public radio. We're going to do a series of 5 and 5 for, I think, spring and fall next year of those. That's going to happen.
And what point do you guys ask me when I am when your whole operation asks me when I'm available for my one-on-one hour-long interview in the Cat Ranch?
What next time you come to LA? You come. You know, the last time you were there, we didn't have much time. You needed to do your show. I graciously offered you the use of my.
No, you were very gracious. Absolutely.
My garage. Where, are you upstate right now?
No, I'm in New York City.
Where? Well, no, you don't have to tell me on the air.
I'm on 38th. I'm in 38th and 8th.
I'm so close to you, but I wish I had time to actually come in. But
no, I'm very busy too. All right, Mark. We've got
Thank
to move
you,
on
Sam.
In the show because we've got our songs of the week. You want to hear them?
I got to go. I'm going to go interview a big celebrity.
Who?
Chris Rock.
Oh, so you got time to do the Chris Rock interview, but you don't have time to do mine, right? I got to come out to the Cat Ranch, but you, Chris Rock, where are you going? How much are you supplicating yourself to get this interview? That's what I'm asking.
I walked right into that one.
Where are you going? How far are you driving? You renting a car and driving out to New Jersey?
I'm just going to take the train uptown.
Uptown?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Look, you know what it is? It's like, when did you text me about this?
Hi, Mr. Rock. I am here to do the interview.
I like the guy who laughs like smugly over there. who is that over there? Is that a...
It's a guy named Matt. You don't know him.
They're always named Matt, those guys.
Yeah, always. It's not his real name.
In the universe of nerd casting, there's always a Matt.
So who else are you going to, like... Well, I'm going to see Mr. Rock, and then tomorrow I am going to. What are you going to do? Are you going to go like?
I'm doing
going
a
out
panel
to the Hamptons
with Ira
to
Glass
see.
And
are you going to interview
them? Yeah, I'm going to go interview Puffy in the Hamptons.
Is that it? You're just doing Chris Rock this weekend while you're here.
Yeah, and I don't know when that's going to go up. And you know, you're right. You're right. I was brought out here on a special thing. I squeezed that in. I didn't squeeze you in. You know why? Because I think in my heart, I know that if I do an interview with you, I want to be fully focused. I want to be well guarded. I got to get up to speed on politics, and I want to be able to put it up immediately because that's how important a voice you are. And right now, I'm a little backlogged. So out of respect for you, I want to be able to do it so like we can turn it over quickly because what you say is important.
It's really
now.
It's really disgusting what you've turned into. It's disgusting. I think you need to get married and divorced again, buddy, because this ain't gonna. You're gonna have to.
Yeah, I understand.
You're not gonna be able to ride this like appropriate
no, right.
Mark
you're
Maron
right.
for too long.
You're right, and it's essentially this thing that we have that I'm really banking on when everything goes wrong.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. What did you do your show with? Eddie Asner or something like that?
Yeah, I had Ed Asner on.
Yeah,
I'm sure he was like,
let's just do, like, we'll do the Cedar me thing with you, Ed.
Mm-hmm.
All right, buddy.
Sam,
good luck
this weekend. This was great. It almost felt good at the end. Nice. Yeah, well, you know, good luck with everything you're doing.
How
do I listen to this show? Is it on now?
Yeah.
Oh, is it on the internet?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to do
Majority.fm, and you can also do it with, you can also podcast it. I'm not sure if you're familiar with how that works.
Oh, so I can download what we just did?
Yeah.
Oh, you're on the cutting edge, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's available to listen. Actually, it'll be up in 2 hours. We don't do the whole thing where I go send it off to a whole team to process it and make me look good. I don't do that.
Right. All right, hey, Matt, hang on as long as you can.
Will do.
I'll talk to you later.
Bye, Mark. All right, folks. Thank you very much, Mark Maron, ladies and gentlemen. And is he still on? Okay, good. I don't need to put on the applause meter. All right, now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for our songs of the week. Do you have the Jimmy Reefer cake, or should I play it from here?
I did not have the Jimmy Reefer
cake
on.
Okay, I will play it from here. Oh, wait a second. Who's that? Hello? 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 Is this Rosen?
What the fuck?
Wow.
What the fuck, Sam?
Who is this?
This is Chris.
Your phone sounds horrible. What's going on, Chris?
Well, I listened to the show for the first time today, and guess who I was not getting movie reviews?
I guess you? This is the first time you've listened to the show. Where have you been for the past 3 weeks? I keep IMing you. Are you around? No response.
It's complicated. If I can be frank, it's Huffington. I'm here working at Movie Phone right now. We're under the AOL umbrella. She cracks the whip.
You're working for Huffington? I can barely make you out. Your phone is bad.
Hold on.
You know how he is. He sits in his cave.
I guess.
They took away my better phone. So.
Oh, there we go.
Anyway, Sam, I have some recommendations for you if you have a moment.
Sure.
Okay. This first recommendation is just something I'm coming up with off the top of my head. It's actually a TV show. I tuned
it's a great
in at
film
9:30
recommendation.
Last night.
That's a great film recommendation.
We'll get to this film. We'll get to the film. I'm actually prepared this week, which is funny because you didn't have me on.
So you're prepared even though you're not on?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Imagine that, Sam.
Okay.
All right. So the show I'm talking about is a show called Whitney. It was actually on in place of Parks and Recreation, so I was duped into watching it. But you know what? I was immobile on the couch, so I was forced to watch it for a little while, and now I kind of liked it.
Whitney, I've never heard of it. Well, that sounds perfectly horrible.
Yeah, NBC, Sam. You can watch that. You can probably watch it on demand wherever it's okay.
Chris, you realize that most movie reviewers, most TV critics hate that show.
Wow, look, it's Matt. You know, he stopped playing his PS3, and he's now talking.
What's the other review?
Movies I haven't seen, but, you know, you tend to like those more. So we have, Tree of Life is on Blu-ray.
Saw it.
And I believe it's also on demand. I didn't check because I didn't have time. But another movie, Sam, that came out in the summer called Horrible Bosses is also on Blu-ray, which really helps you see the movie, you know.
Right.
But it's also
no,
on demand.
You don't want to see the one thing about Horrible Bosses is you really either got to see it in the theater or on Blu-ray because you're just not doing the cinematography justice by watching that on a standard definition.
Right. You got to relate to a horrible boss in your own life, Sam. Come on. You know this. You had a horrible boss there, America. We all did. Come on. I got one more recommendation. It's actually something I haven't seen again, but it's a movie that is on demand, and I did check this. It's on demand, but it's also in theaters right now. It just got released, called Margin Call. It's about a financial thriller or something. I don't know. Stuff I don't care about. Demi Moore, Simon Griller is in it, you know. So that's something you can watch on Amazon on demand.
Wow. Chris Rosen, even when it's not even Chris Rosen, it's bad.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling in. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, you've got people who are just who are mocking Chris Rosen. Not even Chris Rosen. Mocking him.
People thought that was Chris Rosen.
Yeah, that was
that was good. Whoever you were.
That was an excellent, excellent, excellent Chris Rosen impression. Okay. All right. Let's go now to Jimmy Reefer Cake. Hippie kids out in the street. Hippie kids never hurt anyone. Here we go.
Hey, hippie kids out in the streets, banging them drums and marching those feet, drinking coffee and eating pizza, head on down at nine and I'll meet you. Occupying the whole wide nation, we're having ourselves a real good conversation. Who cares if the protesters sleep in a tent? That's no reason to get so hell-bent. The cops in Oakland are a friggin' disgrace. They shot Scott Olsen and busted his face. Turns out he's an Iraq war vet. Whether he survives, there's no guarantee yet. The mayor across the nation better learn this lesson. But the right-wingers won't even flinch, I'm guessing. Rush Limbaugh says the protesters are maggot-infested hippies, human garbage. Well, Jimmy Reaper Cake says they're infested, all right. They're infested with love. Love for this country. Love for all mankind. Yeah, we're going to need a whole lot of love to save this planet. Hippie kids never hurt anyone. Hippie kids just want to have fun. But it's hard these days not to grab a tissue. Scott Olsen, the family, your friends, our prayers are with you.
Jimmy Reaper Cake went old school punk rock on us.
Went old school punk rock. His cousin's in town. Production value high. Love the lyrics. Hippie kids never hurt anyone. Excellent. Thank you, Jimmy Reaper Cake. And now, ladies and gentlemen, David Benjoya writes, before everyone forgets who he is, here is our Marco Rubio song. It's too slow to be a rumba and too fast to be a mambo. And the steel string guitar is all wrong. This concerned us until we realized in a Rubio song, inauthenticity is a feature, not a bug. Basta ya. The Screamers. This, of course, is from the Screaming Majority. Here it is. Cuba Libre.
Cuba Libre. No, thanks. I'll just have a rum and coke. I'm Senator Marco Rubio, Tea Party favorite from Florida. My parents were enemies of Castro. They fought mano a mano, kinda, sorta. So I said my folks were exiles from Cuba, and that's a fact. An after the fact. That I really didn't get exact. There were little details that I missed, yeah. But remember, things were also pretty bad under Batista. My parents left early, but they wanted to go back. Which means they didn't like the U.S., but please ignore that. My historical lapse was really quite innocent. I'm proud that my parents were simple immigrant, but they were exiles, damn it. I'd still make a good vice president. I'd still make a good vice president. So I'm an exile, just like all of us. I practically washed ashore with Elian Gonzalez. My folks were on the forefront of the rebellion, maybe. Oh, God, don't say that I'm an anchor baby. My historical lapse was really quite innocent. I'm proud that my parents were simple and ignorant. They were exiles. Damn it! I'd still make a good vice president. Okay, and so I'm not all that young, and it's not Marco Rubio. It's Mark Rabinowitz. I'm an 86-year-old Jew from New York. I keep in shape. I changed my name during the whole Ricky Martin craze in the 90s. So sue me.
Bravo, yes, Cuba. Two great offerings this week. As always, I love it. Marco Rubio, we hardly knew you, and hopefully
Mark Rabinowitz.
Oh, sorry. Mark Rabinowitz. Well, I'm talking about Marco Rubio just in general, but maybe that's who Marco Rubio turns out to be. Maybe he's just like an 86-year-old Jew who's been down there who, like, you know, has been doing using that night cream. All right, we've gone way long, but shall we transition into the better half of the program? What a bonus you had today. All right, folks, I'll take your calls, 646-257-3920. Got a couple stories about Occupy Wall Street. Oh, darn it. I just realized we didn't speak to Jeff. All right, we'll figure that out. Story about MERS being sued. Couple more stories, all on the better half of the program. Folks, of course, still need your memberships. If Breitbart, if you're listening, please feel free to become a member now that you've got that $10 million just for having Google ads on your site. Holy cow.
Get us in touch with your AdSense representative. We want to.
I was going to say, holy cow, what might it must be like to get those massive, massive millions of dollars worth of checks from Google AdSense. Man, that's unbelievable. Well, you know what they say. Republicans always are better businessmen than the rest of us. What they did with the banks. All right, folks, you can IM me at Majority FM. You can call us at 646-257-3920. Become a member. Buy your junk through our Amazon link. JustCoffee.coop. Coffee, tea, and chocolate. Fair trade coffee. Sometimes organic, if you want. Fair trade coffee, fair trade tea. It's a co-op. It's a great company. Great guys. Mike Moon, our latest member. See you in the better half.